And this past week saw more provocation and violence in Israel. During a most sensitive time, the observance of Ramadan for Muslims and Passover for Jews. And until this past Tuesday night, Jerusalem was experiencing one of its quieter Ramadans in years, with the tragic exception of the police killing of Mohammed Khaled Al-Asibi at the Al-Aqsa compound on March 31st. Everything changed this past Tuesday night, Jerusalem time. This past Tuesday night in Jerusalem, Israeli police forces raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is the third holiest in all of Islam. TikTok videos were uploaded by Palestinians who had gone there to pray, and the videos provoked international outrage, especially in the Arab world. They showed stun grenades exploding on the mosque floor, police officers beating people with batons and rifle butts. A fire broke out by one of the mosque doors. Windows were shattered. People were screaming. And according to media reports, about 400 Palestinians were detained, with many of those released showing bruises all over their bodies. The beatings and desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque ignited a response from Hamas, which fired rockets into Israel. Rockets were also fired from Lebanon into northern Israel, with no group claiming responsibility. Israel countered with airstrikes into Lebanon and into Gaza. There is much, much more to the story, which you can explore by going to the Gaza Corner section of the Tangents playlist. Harry is on a ship somewhere, not able to do the playlist tonight, but in relief, all-star relief, Kent Howard came through and put up the Gaza Corner link. So that is what is at the playlist right now. Go to tangents.com, left-hand column, click on the Tangents playlist and scroll down. You'll see the Gaza Corner links, and you can learn a lot more about what I just talked about. The articles I would point you to, just so I tell you, one of them, the headline is, Jewish activists fueled the flames, but Israel police sparked the Temple Mount fire. That's from Haaretz. And then from a Palestinian perspective, published by 972 Mag, there's a headline, the Israeli police wanted to show that they are in control of Al-Aqsa, subtitled, writer Jalal Abu Khater explains the context behind a violent raid in Al-Aqsa. He's a fine writer, and he's interviewed in the article, and this quote is quite poignant from Jalal. He says, quote, Al-Aqsa is more than a mosque for Muslims to worship. It is where we Palestinians practice some form of sovereignty. When we enter Al-Aqsa, we feel that it is our place, a very small space in a big city that is alienating us and pushing us to the sidelines, leaving us in neighborhoods that have been turned into ghettos. When we are losing on all fronts over the years, we hold on tightly to places like Al-Aqsa, because if we lose it, we have nothing else to claim for our own. Israel has to keep that in mind. We are not leaving this space alone, and we are not giving it up very easily. The words of Jalal Abu Khater. I'd like to shift to a rare good news story. Good news for the balance of Gaza Corner. Israel's Supreme Court has been used by the state to dispossess Palestinians from their homes. from their land and provide a legal veneer for ethnic cleansing. Seldom do Palestinians receive a fair hearing or is justice served. But there are exceptions, particularly when cases receive global attention or actual advocacy from U.S. congresspeople. Israel creates laws that permit what ordinarily would be considered illegal to be the law of the land. Just a few years after the creation of Israel, in 1950, Israel passed the Absentee Property Law, which essentially legalized the theft of Palestinian property and Palestinian assets. The law allows the state to take control of any property whose owner lives in a quote-unquote enemy state and make use of them at will. The Absentee Property Law was used to confiscate the lands and homes of the 750,000 Palestinians who were forcibly displaced during Israel's creation in 1948, which is also known as the Nakba, or catastrophe. Due to collusion between government organizations and private organizations, such as the Jewish National Fund, the Israeli government has been abusing this law to transfer the ownership of legally owned Palestinian homes in East Jerusalem and transfer the ownership to the Jewish National Fund, who then evicts the rightful owners. For 32 years, the 18-person Sumrin extended family had been facing unjust eviction from their home. Can you imagine living 32 years in a home where any day you could be evicted? The case of the Sumrin family is a perfect example of the legal abuse used to evict Palestinians who have lived legally in their homes for generations and are thrown out into the street. This case received global attention. In addition to then Representative Jackie Speier and 25 other U.S. congresspeople wrote a letter in 2020 to Israel's then and now Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in support of the Sumrin family. And there was also a coalition of organizations that tried to raise awareness and raise money for the Sumrin legal defense. One of the coalition partners was the Bay Area's Rebuilding Alliance. 3 years ago, it created a fundraiser through the nonprofit called Global Giving. It's a nonprofit global crowdfunding platform. And Rebuilding Alliance on the platform raised almost $50,000 for the Sumrin legal defense. Here's a quote from Rebuilding Alliance. The Sumrin family's house was taken by theft, a central fact ignored by the Jerusalem District Court when it rejected the Sumrin family's appeal against eviction by the Jewish National Fund. In the 1990s, an Israeli court and a government commission determined that expropriation of their property was in violation of Israeli law. When the government of Israel uses the absentee property law exclusively to evict Palestinians, they fail to uphold the responsibility of a democracy to apply laws fairly and equally, unquote. Rebuilding Alliance helped raise money to hire the team, the legal team, that took this case to Israel's Supreme Court. I was involved with Rebuilding Alliance at the time, and I remember talking with Donna Baranski-Walker, who's the founder and executive director of Rebuilding Alliance, and she told me she didn't expect the Sumrin family to win because the deck is so stacked against Palestinians. Shaya Rothberg, member of Seek Peace Jerusalem, said at the time, No one disagrees that the home was built by the Sumrim family and was originally owned by the Sumrim family. Rothberg said, quote, a classic example of abuse of state power to persecute an innocent legal family, residents of Jerusalem, because they are Palestinian Arabs. Fast forward to this past Monday, 3:13 in the morning, San Francisco time. Yes, I was up early. I opened Twitter and saw this post from Yuri Agnon. Breaking: Supreme Court rules in favor of the Palestinian Sumrim family, blocking settlers from displacing them and taking their home. I literally can't believe that I am writing these words. There is no justice in this system, but sometimes the struggle wins. Via tweet from Yuri Agnon. I immediately emailed Rebuilding Alliance's Donna Baranski-Walker with the news. This was her reply, although not at 3:15 in the morning, a little later. Her reply, all in caps and exclamation points, wow, wow, wow. Quote, I believe that that letter, led by then-Representative Jackie Speier and including 25 others, was the reason that that case was accepted by Israel's Supreme Court. We all gave it only a 20% chance at the time. That a great judge was assigned was just the luck of the draw. During the hearing, Justice Daphne Barak Erez asked the right question, quote, why did the state apply the absentee property law here when the family was never absent? Donna continued, in so many ways, the Supreme Court verdict is a remarkable victory. Three justices decided once and for all that the Sumrim family won their right to continue to live in their home without fear of eviction. What's missing? The High Court chose not to consider their right to own their home. The words of Rebuilding Alliance Executive Director Donna Baranski-Walker. The Sumrim ruling could disable a legal ruse that has enabled settlers to evict Palestinians who have legally owned their homes for generations. But when it comes to Israel, it's hard for me to be optimistic about justice. The Israeli public broadcaster, Kan, K-A-N, reported last month that Israel's national security minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, the openly racist Jewish supremacist who supports the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians, Ben-Gvir ordered the demolition of quote-unquote illegally constructed homes in East Jerusalem, which is Kafkaesque because in Palestinian neighborhoods, licenses to build or even renovate homes are rarely granted by Israel. Keep in mind, Israel occupied East Jerusalem in 1967. Since then, according to Daniel Seidman, an Israeli lawyer specializing in Jerusalem and also a very good follow on Twitter, he told the Washington Post, quote, an estimated 58,000 settler homes have been built in East Jerusalem, compared with just 600 Palestinian dwellings, unquote. But at least this week, the 18-member Sumrim family had a 32-year black eviction cloud over their heads finally removed.